Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you are listening to the Chiricahua Real Estate Network here. I am Kelly Fitzgerald, the designated broker of Chiricahua Real Estate. And today I am talking with Sam Pillsbury of Pillsbury Vineyard and Winery in Willcox, Arizona. And he is with me, I believe. Are you there,
I am. I'm right here, hon. I'm right here on the side of the road in the, by my vineyard, or actually by a friend's vineyard, yeah.
It's amazing how people call in to this show from all over. I've had people call in from the side of I-10, from the side of Kansas Settlement Road, just from all over the place. So thank you so much. I know how busy you are. Thank you so much for taking the time and being on the show this morning. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, hon. Love to get the word out there about our wonderful area and the great things that are happening there.
Now, what brought you to this area?
Well, a couple of things. One of the things that I really care about is being honoring a region. Funnily enough, I mean, I'm a pretty itinerant individual. I was born in Connecticut. I lived in the Caribbean. I lived in Massachusetts. I grew up in New Zealand. I lived 20 years in Hollywood making movies. I live in Phoenix, but one of the things that I've always cared about is sort of being honest to the place that you are. I mean, I remember a really interesting experience. A thing that really struck me was when I was a kid in New Zealand. I asked the mother of one of my friends what they're doing for the holidays, and she said, "Oh, we're going home." And I said, "Oh, where's that?" She said, "London." And I said, "Are you from London?" She said, "No, they'd never been to England," and that coming from a kid who spent part of his life in Massachusetts, kind of, you know, halfway between Walden Pond and the Concord Bridge, and finding like Flint Indian arrowheads in the creeks around the house in the woods around where we lived, it seemed really bizarre to me that somebody was living in a place as distinctive and remarkable as New Zealand, but had no regions to it at all.
Right,
So when I found myself, I've always wanted to make wine, always wanted to grow wine, right? And when I found myself in Arizona through a number of accidents that had to do with a movie and a human being of the female gender, I started sniffing around what might be a good place to grow wine grapes in Arizona. One of the pluses was that because nobody thought that this was a good idea, the kind of land that I was looking at was incredibly cheap,
right,
and
right.
And I didn't have I didn't just sell my IT company for $36 million, which is really the only thing that you should do if you want to plant a vineyard and make wine. So I had to be smart, and I started drinking from the very small amounts of wine that were actually being produced in Arizona in the late 90s, and I stumbled on this Chardonnay that was so remarkable. I had been drinking Chard for 25 years. I never tasted anything like this. I got in my car, found out where it came from, got in my car, and drove down to Kansas Settlement just south of Willcox, and I bought 40 acres next to this little scrappy vineyard that was there at the time. And I turned out to have made the right decision because there's now 500 acres of vines around us. There's about 70% of Arizona wine is grown in this immediate area. It's absolutely brilliant for growing wine grapes for a bunch of reasons, which I can explain, which may initially seem kind of bizarre. And, you know, last year we got best white wine in Arizona, best red wine in Arizona, best dessert wine in Arizona, and on and on. So we've stumbled on something pretty cool. And one of the funniest things of all about this story is when I planted my first vines in 2000, one of the jokes on Saturday Night Live was one of the 10 best ways to lose money was to plant a vineyard in Arizona. And because, of course, everybody thinks Arizona is, you know, the Sonora Desert. They forget that the Grand Canyon is closed in the winter because of snow. And we're up high. We're at 4,350 feet, nearly a mile above sea level. And it's cool. And apart from the land being inexpensive, relatively inexpensive, and we get cooler nights. We get more UV because of the altitude. We get all sorts of interesting things happening. The soil is perfect because it's not very fertile soil, and that's what wine grapes like, believe it or not. So it turned out to be a bloody gold mine, actually, you know, and we're just, I mean, I was just walking through my vineyard this morning at 6 o'clock, and it's just astonishing how well the vines are doing. We've gone from 24 tons 3 years ago. 2 years ago, we did 46 tons. Last year, we did 60 tons, and this year, we're going to do about 75 tons of grapes, you know, and the quality
wow.
is,
that
so that's
is,
my short story.
That is amazing, just the increase in the yields that you've gotten from year to year.
We've been planting more vines every year, but also in the third year you can get a small amount of crop off the vine, maybe a ton an acre. The next year you can get about 2 tons, and then you can get about 4 tons, and we tend to lock off at around 4 to 5 tons an acre because we drop fruit because we want to concentrate the juice that's in the remaining grapes and
right.
But it, yeah, as the vines are becoming more mature, the wines, the quality is going up, the volume is going up, and we've got new plantings coming on stream every year too. So it's a very tough long term thing. It takes about 10 years to break even if you plant your own vines. But I know. Don't tell me about that. But I wanted to make a wine that was specifically honored a particular region. We never go outside of our own vineyard or one of our two neighbors where we sometimes buy grapes from. We're honoring Cochise County and Wilcox.
Now, how many total acres do you have right now of actual vines?
I have 100 acres of land and one block, and then we have about 30 of those acres planted, about 14,000 vines.
Wow. Now, is there something particular in this area where it is more conducive to one type of grape rather than another? What types do you find grow best here?
It's quite a wide range. I mean, I don't want to sound like somebody who says, you know, we're good at everything, but it's a pretty wide range. The spot, it's called terroir in the wine business, but it's
uh-huh.
basically about the place and all the things about that place that make it special. So where we are exactly, probably a little warm for Pinot Noir. I mean, we could grow it and make Pinot Noir, and it would be fine. But if you want to make a really, really high-quality Pinot Noir, we probably need to be slightly higher in altitude. But what does well is quite a big range. I mean, anything Mediterranean does great. And again, it's not because it's warmer. It's not a cool climate, but it's very sunny. So the hottest it ever gets is 100 degrees, and that's like in June. But at night,
right.
it drops right down to 60. So the any 24-hour cycle, the average temperature is relatively low, and that change in temperature is really good for producing quality wine grapes. That's kind of our secret weapon. Of the Mediterranean varieties, I'm kind of a Rhone guy. I love Rhone
mm-hmm.
wine. So we mostly grow Shiraz, Mourvèdre, Petit Syrah, Viognier, Grenache, Roussan. But strangely enough, probably the wine that I tasted that, you know, that got me down there was Chardonnay. And Chardonnay has a bit of a struggle where we are because it's a very early budding variety and it becomes very vulnerable to frosts. If we can get it through the frost challenge, and there's still maybe one up in the next couple of days, by the way, but the quality on the Chardonnay is extraordinary, but probably the best wine grapes for our general area. I mean, where we really excel is Shiraz, Petit Syrah, and probably Malvasia, which is an aromatic Italian variety, which is remarkable. And the other thing is that a lot of these varieties have a tough time in other climates. For example, Viognier, which is a very high-end white Rhone variety, is a tough grape to grow in France. It loves where we are. It just loves it. And Malvasia is the same thing. It just flourishes in our sort of area. So it's quite encouraging and quite exciting, actually.
You know, I've spoken with several people in this area that are growing wine grapes, and they seem to feel like this area is sort of like the best kept secret of the wine grape industry. Is that what you kind of feel as well?
I thought it was 15 years ago. In fact, I actually thought in 2000 when I planted 20 acres, I thought in 5 years' time big vineyards in California, like Firestone and the big guys. I thought they would be out here buying 1,000-acre parcels of planting vineyards. Not one of them has shown up yet. It may be that the drought in California now might be pressuring them to look elsewhere, but there's I tell you what, it's the weirdest thing. I get this from I spent 40 years making movies, and I know a lot of people in the film industry. When I set my project up here in Arizona, I thought I was going to be able to get some of these really rich guys to put some money into this project for me. But to absolutely draw a blank, there's such a feeling in California that nowhere else in America matters, and that Arizona is a joke. And that perception also exists in New Zealand. I've got friends that I've known for years who just, when I told them I was growing wine grapes in Arizona, they just said, you are crazy. And I thought, boy, you guys got short memories. 30 years ago, you were the crazy ones, you know. So it seems as though these guys get conservative really quick. I've always tried to keep an open mind and look at the essentials rather than the perception. And I looked at the essentials, and I looked at the soil and the land and the sun and the rain and the temperatures and blah, blah, and the cost. And I went, I think this might be a really good idea instead of, you know, going to Napa and paying $100,000 an acre and then not being able to get any labor to work in the vineyard. So they're going to find us out. And I think we might be quite close to that actually happening.
I think so too.
We've got some pretty intense interest and critical praise from a bunch of wine, you know, reviewers and from California, and who once again pretty much arrived thinking that this was a joke and kind of left writing some pretty nice things about us, some of which I'd be happy to show you. But so, you know, we seem to be a conservative species, and I think it's, look, this culture of ours, we still use miles and pounds. We still have pennies in our currency. These things are ridiculous. But people don't like change, and the bigger the country gets, the harder it is to get it to change. And just people are going to be slow to discover what's here. And I'm sure glad I bought my land a while ago.
I am on the Chiricahua bench. I know you're over the Wilcox bench area. When we moved out here and bought our land, it was literally dirt cheap. And we moved here from California. And I thought, wow, can you imagine this land in, you know, the area we came from and how expensive it would be? And at that point, I thought, well, you know, it's just going to explode. This area, the land is cheap. It's gorgeous here. It's perfect climate year-round for a number of things. It's just going to explode. And it's been very slow, but I'm kind of having lived here for a while. I'm kind of happy it's growing slowly.
Look, it's fine. I thought Wilcox would be full of wine bars and boutique stores and, you know, blah, blah, blah 10 years ago. So, again, Wilcox has barely changed. But it's probably going to change. It's probably going to change slowly, but there might be an explosion. I don't know. 15 years ago, I nearly bought a big old building in Wilcox itself, and I toyed with the idea of buying 1,000 acres and just sitting on it, but I paid $400 an acre for my first 40 acres, and it's the land's now $4,000 or $5,000 an acre, you know, for the same kind of land. So it's didn't turn out to be a bad investment, but it'll keep going up. It's got to, unless the whole industry dies for some reason, which is, you know, highly unlikely given how much people like to drink wine and how few people are converted to it still, you know.
Right. If there was someone who came to you and said, you know, I'm really thinking that I might want to grow wine grapes, I might really want to put in a vineyard, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to make sure they have plenty of money, basically, because I have chosen to keep expanding since I started. And I've made that decision, but the truth is, because of that, I haven't drawn a penny of income in 15 years. Fortunately, I have other sources of income, but I would say make sure you have plenty of dough, because you know, if you keep pushing the boundaries like I am, you're struggling to pay your bills every month, you know. And one day, it's an interesting thing about all of this. the other day at 6 in the morning, I was wandering through the vineyard, and I thought, God, this place has never looked so good. And it must be, it rained a lot during the winter, and blah, you know, there's a whole bunch of reasons. And I said, you know, this, I forgot that if you plant a vineyard, every year it gets better. Every year the roots get deeper, the vine gets bigger, the grapes get higher quality, the foliage is more intense, there's more crop. So it's a struggle, but it's a very encouraging struggle because it just gets better and better, and makes you feel good when you're broke. And then you can always drown your sorrows in a really good quality bottle of wine at the end of the day. So
there you go. Exactly.
There's plenty of that around. We've got no money and tons of wine, so, you know.
You know, there are worse situations to be in, I must say.
Well, you know, again, we put a lot into it, but when I bought this last chunk of land in 06, I paid $350 for it, and it just got valued by the bank at $1.6 million. So it's not wasted. It's not going down the drain, you know.
Right, and I do think that this particular area is just prime for growth. Being in real estate and working with a number of the vineyards, and as you know, we're working diligently to promote this area as a whole to the that industry. It's changing, it's happening. There's sort of the winds of change have started blowing, and I do think that more people are going to be discovering this area and coming out here, and it's going to be the people who were here initially that are really benefiting from that.
Yeah,
inevitable. Yeah.
Well, also if you look at what happened to Napa, I mean, this valley is doesn't have enough employment. It's a poor valley, and we could bring. You don't just bring vineyards, you bring boutiques and you bring art galleries and you bring restaurants and you bring bars and you bring B&Bs and all sorts of stuff. So the potential for transforming this whole valley is huge. And already, I mean, I employ 14 people now. I mean, these are people who didn't have work before, a lot of them. You know?
Right.
So that makes me happy, you know.
Well, yeah, and this area does need it does need some growth, and it does need to be wise growth. It has to be something that really does serve the area, and I think the wine industry certainly fits that bill.
Listen, there's a bunch of really cool things about wine grapes. First of all, they use a fifth to a seventh as much water as any other crop.
Yep.
They produce up to 10 times more income per acre as any other crop. We have no water shortage at the moment. As long as people stop planting pecan trees and cotton and alfalfa,
yeah,
which are really not efficient uses of water. We have endless labor. It's kind of a no-brainer, and it is a real testament to the lack of vision of some people that there's not more people here doing this. Mostly small people like me, you know, little boutique-y guys who want bit of land and a bit of vineyard and a bit of wine and are trying to be mega producers. But boy, that's wide open for mega producers. You could plant 1,000 acres in one spring and machine prune and machine harvest the whole thing and make wine really inexpensively. That would be really, really high quality. Sort of like they do with malt, you know. With the Sauvignon Blanc there, most of which is really mass-produced wine, it's still really good, you know?
Right. So what is next for Pillsbury Wine Company?
Well, my main ambition is to make the best wine I can, and the best wine in Arizona, and maybe the best wine in America. And so I tend to put all my efforts into making better wine than into trying to figure out how to make a profit. Because I think long term, that's probably going to be a better economic decision anyway. We built our own winery for the first time last year. We were making our wine in other people's wineries before that. So now we have our own. We have two tasting rooms: one in Cottonwood up north by Sedona, one at the vineyard. We have the vines, we have the winery, and we're just making wine, and it seems to get better every year. And we're just going to keep going. And I'm not about to retire anytime soon.
Now, I know, I saw on your webpage that you have an event coming up, a wine tasting on Saturday. So you're going to be in the Phoenix area this weekend?
Well, there's a bunch of different events. I think there's a, I don't know, I haven't got the stuff in front of me. We have about 12 things going on this month. This weekend we have an event at the Tasting Room in Cottonwood on Saturday. We have we're at the Prescott Wine Festival on Saturday and Sunday, and I'll be there in the morning. And I think one of my people is pouring wine at Queen Creek Olive Mill outlet in Phoenix, one of them somewhere. I'm sorry, I don't have that information right in front of me. Actually,
no problem. People can go to your website. It's PillsburyWine.com. And I know locally here on Saturday and Sunday, May 16th and 17th, we have the Wilcox Wine Festival.
Oh, that's a great event. You know, we started this scrappy little thing 7 years ago, and again, people laughed at me. They said, what are you going and doing that for? And I said, look, my grapes come from this area. This is important to me. I'm supporting this. I believe in it. Well, last year, Fodor's named it one of the 10 best wine festivals in the United States of America.
Right.
That's not bad in 7 years. It's a rocking affair now. There's music and food and wine, and it's great, you know. I'll be there all weekend, absolutely.
Yeah, it's actually, I was there the first year, and I thought, well, you know, maybe someday this will grow up and be a real festival. And last year, it was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. It's rocking affair now, yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. It's just wonderful to see that in this area. So
go on.
No, you're going to be there both days then.
I'll be there all weekend, absolutely. And some of my peeps helping.
I told Bonnie I would give her a shout out on the radio. So hi, Bonnie.
Oh yeah. come by, say hi. Yeah, have a sip, do what you think. Okay.
And is there anything else you'd like to say about either where you're going or the wine industry locally that might help someone decide to come here and look for a place to start a vineyard?
Well, I'm still astonished at how we've only scratched the surface here in Arizona. There's still constantly, even restaurant owners. There's some restaurant owners who still don't even know there's Arizona wine, or they've never tasted it, which I find unfathomable. I mean, from New Zealand in 1997, I knew more about Arizona wine than these guys do now. And I still meet lots of people who don't even know there is such a thing. I don't. Well, don't you ever read the newspaper, or don't you? Anyway, it's just kind of astonishing me. But there's a sort of a syndrome that we're up against, which I call the Scottsdale wine snob, which is the 65-year-old retired Scottsdale gentleman who looks at you standing there pouring your Arizona wine, and he kind of sneers as he walks past. And it's like, you know what? Taste the wine, mate, before you trash it. Don't get locked into your obvious stuff. The thing that I would say to people is try them. When you go to a restaurant, look at the. There's a lot of restaurants that say we champion local, and you look and they've got some local lettuce on the menu, and there's not a single local wine there. I don't understand how that's even possible, that you don't look in your backyard before you go into this. We're a little expensive still because we're new and it's a very expensive operation. We can't do wines as cheap as Chile and Argentina and Eastern Europe. But give it a try. You don't have to drink an Arizona wine every day. Maybe try it on Saturday night. And when you go to a restaurant that doesn't have any Arizona wines on it, just call the guys over and say, hey, don't you have any local wine on your menu? You know, shame them into getting off their butts and actually recognizing the what's growing around them. It's something that you can probably tell from the tone of my voice. It kind of irritates me. It's the same thing as that woman saying we're going home for Christmas, you know. It's like, come on, man, you're in the food and wine business and you're living in a place that makes brilliant wine. Get in there, join up. So open your mind up, guys. Enjoy the local and support local and You know, another thing too, just to be, you have no obligation. Nobody has any obligation to support local if it's no good, but that's not the case, you know. And this is huge, highly rated, highly praised wines. I was called one of the rising stars of the Southwest by the Wine Spectator magazine. I mean, it's we're good, you know. Give us a try.
Yes, it is absolutely awesome. And we are just about out of time here, but is there one particular thing about this area that is your absolute favorite? I ask everyone on the show, what is one thing about this area that you love more than anything else? It doesn't have to apply to wine, but if it does, that's great.
No. I mean, I love the wilderness, and you can come to my vineyard in Wilcox, and you can sit outside, and it's clean and quiet and pure, and the tension goes out of your shoulders and your neck, and you slow down. And I think probably the thing that I love the most is going outside after dinner when it's dark and the stars are like diamonds, knives in the sky. The sky is so clear and the stars are so bright. I think that's kind of the thing that I love the most.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. Absolutely. Yep. That's awesome to sit outside and look at the stars at night and drink a wonderful local wine. It absolutely makes for a perfect evening.
Yep.
So thank you so much, Sam, for taking the time this morning. I know you're frantically busy and you're still sitting on the side of the road. So
I am. Thanks for having us. I love to spread the word and appreciate being invited to do so. So thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, everyone listening. We will talk to you next time. Bye.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.